So, it is my great pleasure to introduce to you my good friend, Rosemary Stark. Rosemary has been very helpful and supportive to me personally and professionally. She was present and assisted my efforts when I spoke about macrobiotics to the National Cancer Institute in 2002 on behalf of the Kushi Institute. She has a tremendous story of recovery, healing, and courage. And without further ado, I do want to thank you, Rosemary, for being with us tonight to share this story. So thank you, Rosemary, and you're on.
Well, thank you, Fia, and thank everybody for tuning in. I hope you can understand me. I have what is called a bowed vocal cord or a bowed vocal cord, which means I've had so much surgery in my life that recent vocal cords have become stretched into a bow shape, so it's difficult. Sometimes in the evening I lose my voice, but I'll do my very best. I start in the beginning, and I am very honored to share always what happened to me and the wonderful experiences that I resolved. I was very active as a young child, very healthy, very active, always a kind of a tomboy, always outside playing with all my cousins. I had 19 cousins. And when I used to work with Misho, he always would say, what is the cause of the condition? And at that time, I didn't understand how much food influences what we create. But I can see very clearly that from my father's side of the family and from my mother's side of the family, both of their diets were very extreme. My father was from a German, rigid German background, and his father was a German butcher. And in all my uncle's houses, they had a breadboard with dark brown bread and some kind of a meat, usually a ham, and some cheese and a bottle of schnapps. And you'd come home and you'd slice the bread and put what they call schmierkäse on the bread, which was butter or cream cheese or something. And then you put the ham on the bread, and then you wash it all down with a drink of schnapps. And so you can see that that was a very young way of eating. And then, of course, the schnapps would make it lighter. Now, on my mother's side of the family, they were all Irish-English. And that whole diet was mashed potatoes, lots of sugar, lots of whipped cream, lots of sitting around drinking tea with milk in it. And it was a totally both ends of the spectrum. So I grew up in that kind of an extreme diet. And I was the one, when all my cousins and I had our tonsils out, I think my aunt was a nurse. She got us a wing in a hospital or a ward, and 14 of us had our tonsils out. And I was the only one that had to come back in and have them out all over again. If I had something like a childhood disease, like chicken pox, I had 106 fever and I had hallucinated. If I had an inoculation, I would have a very severe reaction. And I always had very severe reactions to anything. If my kids, my friends and I would roll down the hill, I would come up and I would cover from head to toe with something like poison ivy. But I never considered myself the slightest bit sick or sickly, and I didn't get any attention at all for being sick. Some people said, oh, people who become ill really love it because they get attention for that. Well, the opposite happened in my house. I was an only child, and my mother could not tolerate and really had very little compassion for taking care of anybody. So if I got sick, I was shipped to my Aunt Bessie, who was a nurse. And if any kind of childhood disease, she'd say, oh, pack up your bags, you're going to Aunt Bessie. So you can be sure that I didn't want to get sick very much. Well, my late teens, I had injections or testing for allergies because I had a lot of hay fever and different allergies. And when they tested me for these allergies in New York Hospital, and then they made up a serum to inject me, I went into anaphylactic shock, which is very, very serious. and my arm was very swollen, and I had permanent marks on my arm, and nobody could understand why a healthy girl who had no problems would be reacting like I was to all of these things. Well, nobody knew the answer, but it was 20 years later before we really found what the answer was going to be. But in my 20s, I had a lot of illness, and it was like someone would have a sore throat, I would get pneumonia. Someone would go into a little depression, I would go into a manic depression. So whatever happened to someone else, I seemed to get a double dose of it, and it was very dramatic. And in my 20s, I had a series of episodes happen to me that were very uncomfortable. My father had a cerebral hemorrhage and a stroke. I was very close to him. And the same week that he was dying in one hospital, my mother hemorrhaged from an ulcer in another hospital. And I was forced to put him in a nursing home. That was very traumatic for me. And when my mother came home from the hospital after recovering from her ulcer, she found out that my father wasn't at home. She refused to talk to me. And she put me out of the house, and she moved away and sold our home. And for 6 months, I had no contact with her. And I went into a very, very deep depression and finally was hospitalized. To get me out of the depression, I was given 20 shock treatments. And I think the shock treatments had a very severe effect on my life and on my health and on my nervous system. It was later found out that the disease that I was walking around with created that depression and also created all the reactions that I had. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself. I got married in my late 20s. And in 10 years, I had 7 pregnancies. Out of the 7 pregnancies, I only bore 4 children were born because I lost 3 children, and the last one that was born went full term and was only born at 3 pounds, 11 ounces. And at that point, the doctor said to me, "There's something wrong with your blood. I can't tell what it is, but there's something wrong with your blood." And he made me go to bed in the last pregnancy, and I was put on shock box, which means I had to lay upside down in bed. And every time I had a labor pain, they gave me bourbon to sip. And, of course, that child probably today would have been called fetal alcohol syndrome. But 50 years ago, I actually saved his life. And he was born at 3 pounds, a little over 3 pounds. He was in incubator for 6 weeks. And I was very fortunate that I went to the La Leche League and I was able to bring my milk back in and take him out of an incubator every day and nurse him, because I don't think he would have survived otherwise. And a lot of people who were in the early macrobiotic days with me know Sean, who's now 6'2", and he was very active in the center in Florida, and he was very active at Bill Spears Center, and he made tofu up in Middletown. But he was the last child of these 7 pregnancies. Shortly after that, I was diagnosed with lupus in New York Hospital. And I myself had known that something was not right with me. And I had been in the hospital many, many times before that. I think I had 40 hospitalizations before the age of 50. And they were all serious things. They were not just slight little episodes. In England, for example, I got pneumonia. The pneumonia went into double pneumonia. The double pneumonia went into an infection in my heart. I was in the hospital from December 27th all the way to July, because one infection led to another infection. Finally, the King's, we lived outside of Windsor in London for 2 years. My husband was stationed with Gulf Oil in Europe, and we were living in that area. And the King's doctor actually operated on my sinuses in July and had me in the hospital in April and opened up all my sinuses and took 2 pints of pus out of them. And he said he couldn't understand why my body wasn't healing itself from all the penicillin and whatever they had given me. And finally, because nothing healed, in August, he did an 8-hour surgery called Caldwell Look Surgery, which is done in the dark. And actually, he took my face off, my skin off my face, and you go in the dark, like when the doctor has a light on the end of his face, and he goes in the dark and clears out all the sinus infection in the sinuses. And he said he had only done that 3 times in his entire life. After I was diagnosed with lupus, I called him back and told him, and he said, I couldn't understand why you never healed. And now it explains it to me. And one of the things that I have to say is that with all these illnesses, I had the most wonderful, special, unique doctors. And if I hadn't, I don't think I would have been here today. So I have a tremendous respect for the medical profession. And 1976, I was in New York Hospital, and they were trying to diagnose me with all kinds of conditions. I had a very high, rapid pulse, and I was anemic, and they thought I was bleeding internally. And just by accident, a friend of mine walked into the room where my doctor was, and he said, well, I've had 13 doctors in this room today, and nobody can find out what's the matter with her. And she said to me, oh, to the doctor, oh, she has lupus. And he said, how do you know that? And she said, well, she looks just like my cousin. My cousin has lupus. So on Monday morning, they did a bone marrow biopsy and came back, and the doctor who did the bone marrow biopsy said, I hate to tell you this, but you have nothing in your bone marrow. Well, I didn't know anything about anything. I was raising children, teaching school. And I wasn't concerned particularly about anything medical. I said, oh, that's interesting. I said, what does that mean? And he said, well, that means that your spleen is bombarded, which means that your spleen is not producing red blood cells. And they told me what I needed to do, and I went home. And they suggested I go to Mayo Clinic to see, because this was long, long time ago, 1976, not much was known about lupus, and I was in Mayo Clinic for a week, and there was a doctor there from Ireland, and he said, you have lupus of the brain, and we've been tracing your history from childhood, and all these reactions to inoculations or to drugs or to episodes like allergy testing shows that you have no immune system. You have nothing in your... He said, we actually have done a second biopsy of your bones, and there's nothing in your bones. So he said, you have to go on quinine, which was what they used in those days. And he said, there's not too much help for you, but go to see this doctor in New York Hospital. And I went to see this wonderful doctor in New York Hospital, and he helped me go through a period where I don't think I would have survived because he said, don't listen to anybody who tells you you have an incurable illness. Don't go into any support groups. Don't feel sorry for yourself. And I had a little boy. The little boy who was 3 pounds when he was born was about 4 at the time. And he said, live a normal life. So I was in the Metropolitan, I was in New York History Museum with him. And I went to walk out the door, and I couldn't walk. I just stood at the entrance, and I was paralyzed. And I got a guard, and I said, will you call his doctor at New York Hospital? And he got on the phone. His name was Dr. Cameron. He said, what is it? And I said, you need to send an ambulance for me. I'm over here in the Natural History Museum, and I can't walk. He said, no, I'm not sending any ambulance for you. If you give into this disease now, you'll be dead in 2 weeks. He said, you take who are you with? And I said, I have my little boy with me. He said, well, you take him and you get home, and then when you're in bed, you call me. And I thought he was the most cruel person on the face of the earth. Later I realized how he helped me save my life, because every step down the steps to get a bus, to get to the train to get home was total and complete agony for me. When I got into bed, I called him up and I said,
hello? Hello? Rosemary got cut out here, so we'll just wait until she gets back on. So in the meantime, if anybody have any questions, feel free to ask me any question by pressing 5-star on your phone. Can you hear her well? We'll just wait. She'll realize she's... how's everybody doing? Good? Gonna give her a call on this other line. Anybody have any? Anybody have any questions for me, Thea? Yes, okay. I see a question. Hi, Annette. Hello?
Thea, this is Annette. I just wanted to say that we're hearing Rosemary very plainly.
Okay, great. Wonderful.
She's done a wonderful job, and it's very touching. I hope she gets back. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Oh. I'm back, Thea.
Okay, great. Wonderful.
So sorry. I think I was talking about Dr. Camara and how my first episode with lupus, and how when I got home I told him I didn't ever want him to be my doctor again. And he said, this is a very serious disease, and if you give in to every little episode that happens, you're not going to survive very long. And he said, with immune deficiency illness, you have to be very strong and very courageous. And he kept me going on cortisone and his kindness. I was in the hospital a great deal. I was home a great deal. I had many, many episodes that were excruciating. One time I got out of bed and I tried to walk downstairs, and I got halfway down my stairs and I couldn't walk. And I sat there half a day before I slid the rest of the way down, got to a phone and got some help. And at that day, about all you could do for lupus was to be on cortisone. And I was on 60 milligrams of cortisone a day. And I never paid too much attention to what I ate. Nobody mentioned about diet. And everything was just medical. And in 1985... I just happened by accident, which I don't think there is such a thing, to be in a doctor's office where the nurse said to me, did you ever try macrobiotics? And I said, I never even heard of it. And she said, well, I'm macrobiotic, and I think it would help you. And I brought my lunch with me. Why don't you come up to the lunchroom with me? And she pulled out this food out of her bag, and it was udon noodles with a tahini sauce and vegetables and various things. And I thought, who in the world walks around carrying their food? I never heard of anything like that in my life. And I tried the food, and it tasted pretty good. And I said, and my diet pretty much consisted of meat and meat and more meat and then some bread and then some alcohol. That was pretty much my diet. For breakfast, I had a Kaiser roll with some ham on it. And for lunch, I had a roast beef sandwich, and for supper, I had a hamburger. And maybe on a holiday, I had a vegetable. And so I said, well, what do I have to do to be on this kind of diet? And she said, oh, you go to the health food store. They'll tell you about it. So I said, there's a store with health in it? And she said, well, it's called a health food store. Well, I never heard of that, but I went in, and I said to them, I'm here to learn about macrobiotics. And they gave me a book by Wendy Esco called Introduction to Macrobiotics. I was looking at the book, and I said, what is this? And she said, well, it's basically beans, rice, and vegetables. And I said, I'll have some. And she said, what are you talking about? And I said, just give me 3 bags. Put some beans, rice, and vegetables in each bag, and like the, you know, ba-ba-ba shape, And I went home with these three little bags, and I put three pots on the stove, and I put some beans in one pot and some rice in another pot, and Lord knows what the vegetable was in another pot. I cooked the three of them. I put them on the plate, and my son came home from school, and he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Don't bother me. I'm macrobiotic now." That's how I became macrobiotic, little by little by little. I read that book from cover to cover. I read it from cover to cover about three or four times. I went back to the store. The woman said, "All of this other macrobiotic people in this town who want to help you." And they came over and they showed me how to cook. And then they said, "Oh, you have to go see this woman called Elaine Nussbaum." I lived in New Jersey. And Elaine Nussbaum had cured herself of cancer through macrobiotics. She gave me a consultation. I couldn't tell you a thing that she said. And then I went to a cooking classes with Karen Davis. I couldn't tell you a thing Karen Davis said. I know she got up once and she cut a daikon in half and she said, "Look at this daikon, isn't it beautiful?" And I burst into tears. I thought they were all a bunch of idiots, imbeciles and idiots. I sat up on the curb and I cried. And she said, I think you better have private lessons. So she came to my house and she started showing me how to cook. And then I read Anthony Sadolaro's book. And in Anthony Sadolaro's book, he talks about senior counselors. So I called Elaine Nussbaum and I said, "Give me the name of a senior counselor." She gave me the name of Bill Speer. And the importance of Bill Speer is that Bill Speer had done a 7-year study on lupus, which Elaine didn't know. I didn't know. And I went up all the way up to Connecticut to see Bill Speer in Middletown, Connecticut. And they said the only way I could see Bill Speer was that I had to take a class on macrobiotics before. And I said, "Oh, I know everything about macrobiotics. I've been macrobiotic. I've taken all kinds of classes and everything." They said, "That doesn't make any difference. You have to take this class." And I went up and I took the class, and who was giving the class but John Kaczynski. And he was very, very young at the time. And I walked into the class, and I was as arrogant as could be. And he said, "Are you here to learn about macrobiotics?" And I said, "No, I'm a writer for the New York Times. I'm here to do a report on you." And then I got in to see Bill Speer, and he said, "Can you tell me the cause of your condition?" And I said, "Absolutely, I can tell you the cause of the condition. All the doctors in the United States have made me sick." And Bill laughed, and he said, "Well, I think you have a lot to learn." And that was in May of 1985. In June, I saw Bill again. In July or August, I went down to Florida to take care of my mother who lived in Florida. And I saw Lino Stanchik. And when I got to see Lino, I was now jaundiced. And Lino took me off rice because he said my liver was congested. And then he called me up and he said, "You know, we have this Michio Kushi is coming down here to give a winter conference, and I think you should see him." I said, "Okay, sign me up." Then they called me up and they said, "Well, he doesn't have time to see you at the conference, so you come down to the center and he'll see you at the center." So I drove all the way down 2 hours into Miami, and this little Japanese man walked right by me and got in a car and left. And they said, "Oh, Michio's too tired. He can't see you today. He wants you to come back tomorrow." And I thought, my gosh, I'm not going to bother going chasing this Japanese man all around Kingdom Come. I'm going to forget about it. Something inside me said, I better not. And I came back the next day. And what happened that next day changed my life forever. And Michio was there. Aveline was there. Who else was there? Quite a few macrobiotic people were there from the conference. And Michio looked at me and he said, "What is the problem?" And then he took both my hands and he looked at my hands and then he looked me in the face and he said, "Oh, I see the problem." And then he said, "But you are wonderful. You are just wonderful. Lino, write that down. She is wonderful." Then he said to Aveline and to everyone in the class, in the room, "Clap your hands and say, she is wonderful." And something changed in my heart in that room when all those people said, that. She is wonderful. And I went home with this 2 pages of recommendations from Michelle, and I walked up and down the beach crying, reading You Are Wonderful at the top of the page. And I did all the recommendations. It was very, very difficult. I had a terrible discharge. I wanted to stop in the middle. And Lena kept saying to me, you have to do this. It's just a toxin coming out. And then I came home in January, and I went to the New York Center, and they told me I should see Shizuko Yamamoto. And as I was coming out of seeing Shizuko, I met Bill Steer in the hallway. And he said, oh, it's you. And I looked at him, and I said, yes, it's me. He said, I didn't expect to ever see you again. I expect you to be dead. Why did you change your mind? And I said, I saw Michelle, and he told me I was wonderful. And that began my journey. I read everything I could put my hands on about macrobiotics. I went to every single class they ever offered at the New York Center. I saw Shizuko. I saw all the counselors. I volunteered at the center. I just immersed myself in macrobiotics. And every week, the senior counselors came there, and they taught a class on Thursday night. I went to every single class. And then on Saturday, they started giving the 3 levels. And I took the levels there for 3 years. We studied most weekends. We studied. Denny Waxman would come in, and he would give something. What the counselors would do was they would come Thursday, and then they would counsel on Thursday night. They would lecture. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they would do the levels. And I studied with all these most wonderful, wonderful people and all of the senior counselors. But not only that, I was allowed to come back in and scribe for all the counselors when they came the next Thursday. So I assisted Denny Waxman and Murray Snyder and Bill Steer and Bill Tarr and all the counselors, and it was the most wonderful education. And somewhere along the line, I was having a shiatsu with Eric Stapleman, and he said to me, you're on a lot of medication, aren't you? And he said, I can feel it in your body. And I said, oh, yeah, I'll just keep having medication because I have this terrible disease. And he said, oh, Rosemary, you don't have to take pills. And it was one of the most transforming moments of my life. I never believed that I could take personal responsibility for my life. I believe that if a doctor told you to do something, it wasn't MD, it was GOD. They were God, they had the power, and they knew. And in that moment on the floor in the New York Center, I changed my mind. And I put myself in charge. And I said, I'm in charge of my health. I created this disease, and I can uncreate this disease, and I can strengthen my immune system. And gradually, 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 that's exactly what happened. I went to see Martha Cottrell. She worked with me on the diet and the lupus, and all the counselors worked with me. And it was so encouraging. I remember Denny Waxman saying to me once, you're doing better. Just that you're doing better made me feel so wonderful. And finally, Dr. Cottrell said, you know, your blood tests are really good. You have to go back and see Dr. Cameron in New York Hospital and tell him. And she called him up, and she sent him the book, The Macrobiotic Way. And I went back to see him, and I hadn't seen him in almost a year. And when I went back, he said, some woman doctor called me, and she sent me this book. But he said, go get down the hall, have your blood work done, come back. When I came back and he saw the blood work, he just looked at me with such a strange look. And he said, what are you doing? And I said, I picked up the macrobiotic way. I said, I'm doing this. I'm doing this. Whatever is in this book, I'm doing this. And you have to learn about it. It's going to help people. And he was an elderly man. He said, oh, no. He said, I'm too old to learn all that. But he said, you're going to walk out that door, and you're never, ever coming back here because I want you to read what I wrote in your chart. And he turned the chart around, and he underlined the sentence. And it said, the sentence that I read said, patient will not survive her 54th year. and I was 54 then when I read that. And I just looked at him in shock. And he said, I used to walk up and down the hospital with your blood work in my pocket. And he said, I'd stop doctors and I'd say, is there any hope for this woman? And they would all shake their heads. And he said, I don't know what this Japanese man is teaching you, but you keep going in that direction and don't come back here ever again. And I never did. And I never saw another doctor about lupus. And gradually the lupus went away and gradually it went into remission. And I go back to the Mayo Clinic all the time and they call me their miracle. And they ask me to speak to the doctors there because they have the records of how terribly, terribly sick I was. But that wasn't the end of the story. That was in April. And in May or June of that year, I had been seeing another doctor who was a macrobiotic doctor. His name was Dr. Wally Bernstein, and he was out in New Jersey. And he called me up and he said, well, you have cancer somewhere in your body. And I said, what do you mean? I had already thought I might have cancer, and Misha kept saying, you know, lupus is cancer of the blood. So I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I suspected I was feeling lumps and bumps every time I examine you. So he said, I've been taking your cancer blood test for 5 months, and they're doubling every single month. So you have a tumor somewhere that's spilling cancer cells into your body, and you have two choices. You have 24 hours to let me know. Either I'm going to send you to Johns Hopkins University, or I'm going to send you back to Michio. And I really thought for those 24 hours, because I had been devoted to doctors, and I had been devoted to going to New York Hospital and Mayo Clinic, and normal thing would be to go down to Johns Hopkins, but I knew Michio. Now, if I hadn't met him 6 months before, I would definitely have gone to Johns Hopkins University. And I thought about it, and I thought, went for a long walk, and I talked to my husband, and I said, I want to go to Misho. And I called the doctor back in the morning, and I said, I want to see Misho. And he called Misho, and Misho said, come up here right away that day. So my two sons drove me up to Brookline, and Misho spent a long, long time with me, examining me. And he said, oh, I see, small tumor. And he was pointing in the area of my pancreas. And he said he wanted to send a cook home with me. And he sent an Irish woman by the name of Mary Kett to come and cook special recommendations for me. And the next week, I broke out from head to toe in sores all over my body. These red, red, first it looked like little pimples of poison ivy. And then they got like chickenpox ivory colored and watery, and then they got purple, and then they got black, and I was running fevers, and I called Misho, and also my doctor was there, and he took me to a skin doctor, and the skin doctor said, this is cancer, and they all called Misho and wanted to know what to do, and Misho called me 3 times a day, and he talked to Mary Kett, told her what to cook me all day long, and he would talk to me, and he said to me, Rosemary, you're having chickenpox, measles, and mumps all at the same time. That's what's coming out. All those injections, all those reactions. And he said, I really want it to come out. Don't stop it. And the fourth day, he had my husband took pictures of all these. He said, take pictures because I want to write a book about this. And my doctor was amazed. And the fourth day, he told my doctor to stop the discharge by giving me a very large injection of cortisone. And he said, as soon as the temperature comes down, you come back up to Boston. So Mary Kett and I went to Boston, and I went in to see Misho, and he said, you have pancreatic cancer, small tumor in the pancreas. It's going to take 9 months if you do just what I say. And I didn't have the slightest... I believed him completely. I said, well, shall I go to a hospital and have some tests? And he said, no. He said, you're too weak. You're going to die if you do that. Just do what I say. So for the next, well, it was August. And I had a rough time, and I had cooks come Mary Kay would come and she'd cook for a while, and then Dawn Gilmore would come, and then Kezia would come, and all these different people came and cooked for me. And then at Christmas, I saw Michio every couple of weeks, and at Christmas time, he clapped his hands and he said, "Oh my goodness, you were swinging with the angels, but now you're getting better." And it was a whole year. I did not get cancer-free until the following summer camp. He came up to me in summer camp, and he pulled me aside, and he said, "The cancer is all gone." And my doctor had been taking tests every single month, and the test confirmed the same thing. All the blood tests returned to normal. And truly, it was a miracle. It was a double miracle. And ever since, I have done everything I possibly can to give back to the macrobiotic community. I worked at the New York Center many days a week. I ran all the counseling department, made all the arrangements for counselors to come in and to do counseling and therapy. And I scribed for 5 years there. Suzuko and I did many, many things at the center, and she and I were best friends. We had wonderful times together. I opened a center in my home, and all the counselors came there and gave weekends, and I gave cooking classes. And then later I moved up to Woodstock, New York, and I had a second center, and we were only an hour from the KI, so all my students used to go back and forth to the KI, and it was a very big center in Woodstock, and I was on television while I was there, and they had a weekly program on macrobiotics, and I was called the Joyous Chef of John Joy Road. That was a wonderful period of my life. And then I moved to Hawaii, and I started teaching in college out in Hawaii and having a center there and cooking for people. And I cooked for people for about 20 years. They picked up food in my house every night and then counseled people, and I had many, many classes. And then I got involved with Fia and was involved with helping him up with the KI and trying to create different programs at the Cushy Institute. And I think the work that Fia has done is such a compliment to his father and his mother. I just loved his mother with all my heart. She and I were best buddies, and we used to laugh and have so much fun together. And I cannot, is there anything in the world that I could do for Michio or Fia or for anybody in the macrobiotic community? I would be thrilled to do that. It's just my joy to take one more person. And I used to say, and a couple of years ago, Fia and Michio came over to Hawaii, and I assisted Michio with all his classes. And then we go out to dinner afterwards and laugh and tell all these wonderful stories. And Michio said one night to me, "Why are you doing all this?" And I said, "Well, it's like 30 starfish get thrown up on that beach. Every time I go out and I teach one person macrobiotics, it's like throwing one back." And he thought that was a wonderful story. So I'm going to close now by just being very grateful that he gave me again another opportunity to tell my story.
That's wonderful. Thank you again so much. What an amazing story. Okay, I'm going to open it up now to questions. So if you'd like to ask a question, again, press 5-star on your phone. And we've got a couple questions right now. There was a question earlier. I'm going to see. Hello? Hello? Do you have a question? Hello? Can you hear me?
I'm still on.
I guess the person is not hearing me, so we'll go to this other person. Next question. Okay. Hello, can you hear us?
Hey, Fia, it's Chris in New York.
Yes, hi, how are you?
Okay. I'm good. I have to say, Rosemary, your story is just amazing, and it just shows that God has blessed you so much, and it's so inspiring to me. My question, about 15, 16 years, I deal with a compromised immune system, And I myself was a very heavy drinker and used to go out all the time. And I used to get sick a lot, but, you know, I was always intoxicated, so I really never, if I ever got sick, I wouldn't go to the doctor. I wouldn't really, you know, I just kind of stuck it out until it got to a point a couple years ago where I came down with cancer myself. And I went the conventional way because I was scared. And I came to macrobiotics about a year and a half ago, and I still teeter-tot back and forth. And my question is I have that underlying fear I've noticed that I think is holding me back, like where I'm afraid to let go of the doctors or I'm afraid to let go of that medical grip. And I'm just wondering, how were you able to just, like, move forward? Was it, like, I know that you said you just came to that realization and you said, this is the way I'm going to go. But is there some other, like, encouragement that you could give to, like, just kind of let go of that? Because I know that's what's holding me back.
Oh, yes. When I had to decide between going down to Johns Hopkins or going up to see Michio, I was terrified. It was like, okay, here's where the rubber meets the road. And I went to my family doctor, who I really trusted and had great confidence in, and I said, Michio says I have pancreatic cancer, and I don't want to go the conventional way. I want to do this macrobiotically. And he scoffed at me, and he said, that's a very foolish thing. You're a very, very foolish woman. We could take you into the hospital. We could give you a loop surgery. We could give you 6 months. We could do this. We could do that. I don't know. Somehow in the conversation, as I was talking to him, I just thought, no, you can't. There's nothing you really can do. You can fix the symptom. You can stop the pain maybe for a little bit. You can cut something out, but you can't take out the cause of this. The cause of it is me and what I've done, both with my thinking, both with my food, both with my whole lifestyle. You can't fix that. It was like it came to me that there's many things that medical doctors can do, but they could not fix out the cause of this cancer, because by then I had read every single book I could put my hands on, and I think the education of understanding the Oriental philosophy that we create the energy, and the energy is created that therefore sets the stage for an acid condition, and the acid condition creates an accumulation, and the accumulation creates this cancer, and the cancer is like the end of it, unless you pull all the other stuff behind it. So to answer your question, it took me great courage, and I just said, well, I'm going to do this. And he scoffed at me, and he did all the blood work every single month. And he kind of was a little humble when the following September he came back and he said, oh, this is Dr. Whedon. I want to tell you all your blood tests are back to normal. But it was 7 years later when my mother was dying, and I had her on the macrobiotic diet, and we had nurses in the house. And he came in, and one of the nurses said to him, this woman is crazy. She has this woman on this macrobiotic diet when she should be having milkshakes and everything because she's so deep. She's, you know, whatever. My mother was skin and bones. And this Dr. Whedon said, what Mrs. Stark says goes. And if she says this woman is to be macrobiotic, she is to be macrobiotic. And I remember the nurse saying, well, I'm reporting you to the Board of Health. He said, you do that, because this woman knows better than I do. And I shocked. And when we went out in the hallway, I said, boy, you changed your tune. And he said, you know, we doctors only take an oath, and the oath says to do no harm. And what we are is observers. And he said, every person knows the path they have to walk. And he said, you walked out of my office, and you knew the path that you needed to be on, and you got well. He said, if you stayed with me, I would have buried you. And I think there's many doctors that know the same thing. So take courage to read and study and get four or five people get well who were dying, I've seen, and with my own two eyes, at least 500 people who had no chance to get well. And when you see two, you'll begin to say, I can do this too.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Great, thanks. Okay, next question. Okay, you're on. Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Go ahead.
Hello. Thea.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes, can you? We can hear you.
Oh, you can. Hi. It's Kim from England.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful to hear you. Welcome.
I can't believe I'm hearing you. It's wonderful. Thank you very much for inviting me. Thank you for your story, Rosemary. It was absolutely wonderful, and I'm so pleased you're well. I have epilepsy, and I'm morbidly obese. I've suffered from depression for most of my adult life, I think, now. And I have an eating disorder, overeating, binging. I don't think there's any particular name for it, but it's not anorexia nervosa or bulimia. It's just constant eating. Do you think macrobiotics can heal me?
Absolutely.
I think it can, but
there's
no counsellors here or anything. We're very sparse in England.
I do know several people. One of my best friends is from England. She healed her eating disorder by working with Denny Waxman, and she's done wonderfully, and she's an excellent teacher. But I have seen people with your condition, and I have seen them. I do believe my best advice to you is you must find a good counselor, and
yeah,
then you must do everything that counselor says. I can remember one time Michio saying to Mary Kat, shh, shh, shh. He was doing like this with his hands, and because he was saying too young, and he said that she was roasting the sesame seeds too much. That's how it's such a fine line. And for us who just read a book, and you can't see your own whatever's happening to your energy. But for example, when Lena was able to say to me, you can't have any rice, your kidney, your liver is all blocked, I wouldn't have known that.
No.
There's no such thing as a typical macrobiotic diet. We eat according to our condition, and we heal according to what we eat. And I think when anybody is trying to heal a severe condition, they must have good counseling. That makes the difference. And if you're dedicated, I don't think there's anything you cannot do.
No, I think the same. Thank you very much. I'm just at a loss, really, because I've got so many things. I've got the epilepsy, which I believe I believe will be cured by the macrobiotics.
Absolutely.
But everyone says don't come off the pills, don't come off the medication, because if you do, you're fit and fit and fit. And I'm at home on my own with two children, so I have them to consider. But this is why I need a good counsellor, because my condition is so complex with the depression and, well, it's just the eating order and the epilepsy, really. I think everything else will follow on.
Well, I do want to say, and I hope everyone understands this, that I have used and had to use all my life, the 26 years since I've recovered, I've had many other things happen to me, many things. I've been hospitalized, I've had surgery, I've had cervical cancer, I've had 13 kidney stones. You just don't get well and stay well. The body goes through many changes and many shifts. It's always, always, always important to get a counselor who will work with your doctor. I happen to have Bill Spear as my counselor, and he will not take me off a medication, or he will insist I go to see a certain doctor who will put me on a medication, and he will work with me on that medication, because there are times, definite times, when medical intervention is absolutely necessary.
Yes.
Always. Yes. And I would advise anyone, if someone says, get off all your medication and find a new counselor, because I have at times where I've had to be on medication. There are times when, you know, I called Bill Steer and I said, I'm bleeding from my kidney. Should I drink a dookie bean juice? And he said, no. You get in the car and you go to the hospital.
No.
You know,
yes.
There is a time for medical intervention and there is a time, and if you can combine the two and find doctors who have a respect for macrobiotics, which also we have more and more of, and I'm very fortunate that I've been sent to doctors who appreciate the macrobiotic understanding. And if I go to a doctor who's fat, or I go to a doctor whose condition looks very shaky to me, I don't go back to that doctor.
No, no. I think you have to feel with your gut instinct, don't you? Did
yeah.
you say you knew a counselor that could help me, or did I hear incorrectly?
I can, you know, I'm sure Fia will give you a list. I can certainly give you a list. But there are many wonderful counselors in London. I know of counselors in London, don't you, Fia?
Yes, and we are getting close to the time. Did you want to share your phone number, Rosemary?
I certainly will. My phone number is in Florida. It's 239.
Yeah.
775-6664. For anyone who would like to.
Yeah, repeat that one more time.
7239-775-6664.
Great. Wonderful. So I'm going to take this one last question. Thanks again, Kim. Nice to hear from you. Here we go. Let's see. Hello? Hello in 212.
Hi, Rosemary and Fia. It's Kezia.
Hi.
I just wanted to say a brief hello. And
Hello?
Hi, it's Kezia.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Hi, Fia and Rosemary, it's Kezia. I just wanted to say a quick hello and thank you so much for what you've shared.
And thank you, Kezia, because you were there with me in those days.
It was my great pleasure, Rosemary, and congratulations on your healing story. Thank you so much for everything. Hugs to you both. Good night.
Thank you. Okay, so we just got, we might have time for one more quick question if somebody would like to ask that. Rosemary, maybe give out your phone number once more so that people can have that in case they want to call you up.
239-775-6664.
Great. Wonderful. Okay, thanks again. And, of course, you can also ask questions on the website as well by writing them in there. And when Rosemary can, she'll get to it. So thanks again, Rosemary. Really wonderful. And maybe you can do this again later.
It was my pleasure for you.
I'm going to turn off the recording right now. Just
Thank
a second.
You. Good night.